Welcome to Tales Beneath the Surface. Available on all respectable podcast platforms. Just so you know, this episode contains mature themes and upsetting scenes. You have been warned.
Hello, hello, dear listener. And welcome back to Tales Beneath the Surface. You'll no doubt be happy to hear that from this point on, it's just you and me, together at last. I find my own company of a higher quality than the general riffraff and rapscallions that haunted this project, holding me back. Yes, I've always thought there's nothing like a soliloquy, after all, particularly coming from these lips and this probing silver tongue of mine. Sometimes I look into the mirror and I wonder who is staring back. I think Narcissus was given a bad rap. When you look good, you look good. Silly chap staring at his own beautiful face until he starved. He really must have been quite the looker. Well, if it were me, I would have brought nibbles. Now then. Ladies and some of the more experimental gentlemen, I'm sure you've all been dying to fall back in. Well, I'm not sure you'll be happy you did. Heartbreak can be so punishing, particularly on London's calloused streets. Last call. A phone was ringing upstairs. It sat on a wooden table with three sweeping legs on top of a knotted Kazakh rug in the middle of the room. A stain was spreading beneath it, dark and tacky. The gummed feet of the table marked the angles of a pyramid pointing at the wall. The phone's cord lay trailed across the floor, spooling from its plastic base, ending in a break halfway to the plug socket. Its copper wire snarled in metal knots bare on the carpet. The plug socket was empty, yet the phone rang on. Floating through the corridor beyond the room's empty doorway came the sound of creaking wood and heavy steps. They were deliberate, considered, weary. The trilling phone was not a starting gun. He was coming. He knew it would ring again if this call was missed. Footsteps hit the landing, a silhouette looming in the door. It ducked under the lintel and resolved into a man stepping through the opening. Even in the room, he had to hold his head stooped down to stop it brushing against the popcorn-plastered ceiling. He crossed over to the phone with a single thudding step and picked up the handset between his thumb and index finger, holding it to the side of his face in between his ear and mouth. The phone crackled as he picked it up.
It's happened again.
What? How?
The man said, disbelief curdling to dull anger in his voice.
You said it was the last one.
I can't go into that now. All that matters is there's one person on your list. Then you're free.
Where?
You'll find them down by the Trocadero, once the sun goes down. Best be careful now. Don't want anyone to see you pick them out. Do the deed off the streets. They've got minders.
You talk as if this was my first hunt.
Word to the wise. This one's old.
Save the best till last.
The man laughed.
The crew have left a picture in the usual place. If you need anything else, you're on your own. I'd wish you luck, but I know you don't believe in it. Be seeing you, Sasha.
Best hope not, Svolotch prick.
The man spat. There was a splat as a drop of dark liquid fell on his shaven head. Sasha swiped a fast hand across his scalp and looked down in disgust at the filth smeared there.
Ah, almost forgot about you,
he said to himself, then left the room, returning with a sloshing petrol can. He poured it all over the phone, table and rug, leading a trail out of the doorway.
And now you burn,
he said, his eyes meeting those of the creature pinned to the ceiling with railway ties. Its black eyes glared murder as it strained to free itself, spraying ichor across the floor. The man lit a match and tossed it to the ground. Flames erupted as he vaulted the banister and landed at the bottom of the staircase. Even though he'd bound its muzzle with wire, he felt he could hear a high-pitched keening as he left the house before the roof caught fire. The bell of the small hardware shop clattered as he stalked in. He ignored the shopkeeper's greeting and swiftly moved to the back of the store to rummage through the jumbled goods. The place looked innocuous enough from the outside. One of those ramshackle spots that no one seemed to use, that sold a bit of everything. Deeps was hidden in plain sight, its yellowing shopfront display unchanged since the early 80s, leaving most who passed thinking it was abandoned, or at least wouldn't have been what they needed. Once inside, the aversion continued. The shelves were packed with mismatched goods, their labels long faded. The faint scent of mildew mixed with the sharp tang of leaking chemicals, creating an odour that lingered in the air like the shop itself wanted you to leave.
Oh, and a good evening to you, sir. You know, it wouldn't hurt if you showed even the slightest bit of courtesy. So rude,
said the diminutive man behind the counter, wagging his finger in chastisement.
I am not in the mood, Deep,
he said solemnly.
Mood? Mood, he says. When have you ever been anything resembling a good mood?
The shopkeeper could see him rummaging at the back of the shop, picking up tools and weighing them in his hand, scrutinising labels of different chemicals and sniffing others. He ran his hand beneath the dusty frame of an old, sun-faded advertisement for a lubricant company that had gone out of business years back, slipping the package free. He opened it and looked at the black and white photograph of a familiar face.
Blet,
he said through gritted teeth. He picked up several items and moved back to the front of the store, placing an armful of clutter on the surviving counter. He reached into an inside pocket and pulled out a manila envelope full of cash and began to count out notes.
All this here, and tallow candles, salt, iron nails, the good ones, and...
Yes. Yes, I know.
The shopkeeper turned, glancing over disorganized shelves behind him, removing several small boxes and packets, placing them on the counter.
Burn this,
he said, handing over the crumpled photo.
Problem?
Asked Deep.
It is always problem, just as I am always cursed to fix it.
The door slammed shut as he left, hard enough to knock it out of alignment. It hung ajar like a misaligned jaw, just shy of closing properly.
Bleh,
he swore, as he fumed on the rainy street. Then,
Suka,
under his breath, as he glanced back at the crooked door. He loomed under a bus shelter and lit a cigarette, watching the cars drive past in the evening gloom. If he got through tonight, he would never sign a contract again, especially not in his own blood. How was he to know the depth of strangeness things in this world could sink to? It would be safer to walk to the Trocadero, even if it wasn't raining. Why did it have to be raining? Why did the photo have to be of her? ¶¶ The road swam out of focus as he lost himself in memory's undertow. The first time he saw her was an ocean and a continent away, 20 years before. He'd been greener than lawn clippings and hadn't seen the strange and unnerving outside of storybooks and bad TV shows. She changed all that. It started like any other love story. Boy meets girl, girl meets boy. They laugh and love and dream of a blissful future. It blossomed fast. He lived for her. There was, however, one small wrinkle. The gaze behind her beautiful viridian eyes was ancient and pitiless. They looked out at the world and only saw prey. She was wearing the skin of a human. It made feeding easier and improved the taste. Terror was an intoxicating spice. His moment of clarity hit when he came home early unannounced and found her supping the juice from the neck of a headless corpse. Its head was on the floor, rolled on its side, the jaw missing and the remaining eye still open, staring at him. Her head whipped up on a serpentine neck and he saw her mouth was crammed with bloodstained teeth out of place on anything but the shark from the fossil record. She smiled when she saw him, letting out a laugh that sounded like falling trees and tearing metal.
Well, it would have happened sooner or later, Dorogoi. Now you see me in my true glory. How do you like it, lover boy?
She licked her teeth with a tongue like rigging rope. It ripped across them, spraying blood across the ceiling, then snapped down and pulled a corded nerve from the exposed spine below. She sucked it up like linguine with a wet, snapping pop. He'd run then, sprinting out of the loft and down the stairs, mocking laughter chasing him all the way down. A group was waiting by the entrance. They knew him already. Pulled him in with welcoming arms and comforting words. They'd been here to hunt. That changed when they saw him. This was how it all started, the first steps on the road to where he was today. The decades since had shown him how thin his knowledge was of what lurked paper's thin breadth below the surface. Most days he wished he could go back to bovine ignorance. Jesus, some days he wished the dream had never ended, that he'd come back home a couple of hours later. Fuck. Why did it have to be her? A bus rolled past, splashing his legs with brake dust and dirty water. It sloshed into his shoes, and the damp cold casing his feet wrenched him back to his body. It was time to move. He swept along the walk without noticing the distance. One blink, and he was in Piccadilly. It was busy tonight, all sorts lurking about. If you had the eyes to see, then twisted shit was happening all around. Shadowed doorways were filled with soul drinkers who supped a tender week or two from the desperate and hungry for the price of a single meal. Their embraces went on too long, the drinker coming away full of life and colour, the drained left blue and wrung out, sitting down and breathing out a day or two in multicoloured gasps. He had bigger prey tonight. One name left. Then who knows? He was free. He knew where she would be. They had built the 770-room hotel inside the Trocadero several years back, A key feature was the lack of windows. Its rooms were lit with a clever use of artificial light. The official line was that it made efficient use of the space without defacing the facade of the Grade 2 listed building. Of course, having a labyrinthine windowless residence in central London appealed to a certain kind of clientele that abhorred the sun. Some of the rooms were not advertised. They were reserved for these special customers. He had noticed the symbols concealed cleverly in the wallpaper designs as he entered. A warning for the initiated, but a goad for him. They just drove him forward. He slumped out of the lift and looked down the corridor to see four men standing guard at a set of double doors. This was definitely the right floor. These men were not hotel security. Their stance screamed ex-military, and the sharply cut suits and earpieces suggested a pricier grade of guard. He hadn't expected this. They were hired help, not ensorcelled. Likely unaware who they protected. Still, it mattered little.
Oi, how'd you get onto this level?
One asked, stepping out of formation towards him. Sasha stayed quiet, wearing a confused, vacant look as he walked over to them, gaining speed. He watched their hands stray to their pistols, anxious to draw them. What choice did he have? His fingers briefly traced over the pair of bullet holes in his chest as he sighed deeply and put his boot through the double doors. There was a mountain of flesh standing before him, a figure a full foot taller and wider than him. Thick rolls of fat and muscle shifted under an ill-fitting suit as its mouth full of tombstone teeth smiled broadly.
"You not welcome here,"
it said slowly, its voice threat and thunder. In response, Sasha removed a small plastic box from his jacket, cracked the lid, and threw it at its barrel chest, its silvery contents skittering across the marble floor. The lumbering oaf stood there looking down as its eyes widened.
"That is spectacle repair kit with 500 screws of different sizes."
"Why? Why would you do such a thing?"
It moaned helplessly, scrabbling around the floor and grasping at the tiny screws with its meaty fingers. Creatures like this had habits, and those habits could be leveraged. This would keep it busy while he dealt with the real problem.
Sasha.
She sat behind a fine mahogany desk. Her elegance. No. No. It's false allure. He wrapped a thin silver chain around the door handles to prevent entry and uttered a single word.
Zabichatai.
"Did you ever wonder why I kept you alive, Dorogoy? Why I did not pursue you that night in Minsk?"
He paused briefly and shook her honeyed words from his mind and took two heavy steps forward.
"Your words will not stop me."
He pushed on, drawing the nail gun from his coat, his other hand remaining firmly in his pocket.
"Sweet Sasha, what have you become? You are closer to us than you want to admit."
"I am nothing like you."
"Of course you are nothing like me. How could you possibly be? But you have changed enough to not be one of them. You're no longer quite human."
"Shut up."
His limbs seized, his feet entangled in her words. Each step was pain. He felt the rough texture in his hand as it shot from his pocket, and crystals of rock salt tumbled through the air and hissed as they collided with its form. With its concentration broken, he surged forward, slamming into it hard and pinning it to the desk. He was easily twice its size, but it was old, sly, and strong. Its body began to deform, limbs extending, claws and fangs extruded from gums and nail beds. Its lashing tongue whipped out and the barbed surface lacerated his face. His salt-covered hand hissed as it grappled with one of its wrists. One of its forearms was pinned, two iron nails piercing through to the desk below as thick black liquid began to leak from the holes. It screamed, writhing desperately, trying to free its arm. He put a nail through its other hand and poured a bottle of white spirit over its form.
Shiva Sril! They stole it from you!
It pleaded in panic. He paused, momentarily stunned by the revelation.
Out of place, sir! And now you will never know where she is!
It screeched as its taloned feet lashed out and clawed at his body, cutting deep. His hand reached down to his midsection to stop his innards from spilling free.
You will never find her unless you let me live.
Its foul tongue, now pinned with iron, muffled its wretched voice. He stumbled, the nail gun dropping to the floor, and fell to one knee. His vision swimming. He looked down at his wounds, his hands trying to hold in his exposed intestines. His fingers fumbled inside his jacket, his tools and trinkets scattering across the floor, and retrieved a tallow candle etched with strange runes and rammed it in the creature's open gullet. Then he lit it.
And now we burn.
I'm here in London's Piccadilly, outside the historic Trocadero, where an explosion has collapsed part of the building. Firefighters on the scene think it was a gas leak in one of the kitchens that caused the blaze, and so far, no survivors have been rescued from the rubble. But the majority of the staff and guests in the rest of the building have managed to escape. This is a grim day for London. Wait, I'm hearing they've found someone. Oh, there's a survivor under the rubble. They're pulling him free as I speak. Oh no, he's in a bad way. There's blood everywhere. There's an ambulance on site and paramedics are loading him in. I'm sure I speak for all of us in praying that at least one person walks free from this tragedy.
I'm glad they could pull someone out. I wonder if he made it. Seems like he was real enough, at least. A big strapping fellow, too. What am I talking about? Goodness me. He caught me wool gathering again. Well, how odd. I've never used that turn of phrase before. It seems my mind has wandered off on a trip to an unknown destination, freed from its petty constraints, down unknown streets and into the dark. There'll be plenty of those in the weeks to come, and I'm oh so glad you'll be there by my side. We'll wander down them arm in arm, my voice lighting the way. Don't worry about getting lost, though. There are plenty of paths we can cut. Because, after all, reality writes itself.